Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Episode 337 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Thursday, June 16th, 2022, the final day of off-season practices for the Commanders. You know, today is not unlike the last day of school for Commanders players. We have schools across the country letting out for the summer these days. Schools where I live, Montgomery County, Maryland, a.k.a. MoCo, are done for the summer as of Friday. For the Commanders, Thursday is the final day of their three-day mandatory minicamp, and then that's it. The players have about a six-week break until the start of training camp in late July. Few feelings as a kid were better than that feeling on the last day of school, right? Nothing but off days in front of you. Nothing but freedom as far as the eye could see. You finally would see your teachers relax and ease up on the rules toward the end of the school year. Well, when it comes to rules, Dan Snyder, he wanted to know more about the rules. He wanted to modify and massage the rules of this congressional hearing on June 22nd regarding the Commanders' workplace misconduct scandal. You know, Congress on June 1st sent that letter to Dan and Roger Goodell requesting that they attend the hearing. We finally, on Wednesday, found out each guy's answer. Dan is a no, Roger is a yes. Wednesday morning, we found out that Dan had said no. Wednesday evening, we found out that Roger had said yes. He's going to testify virtually. But yeah, Dan has Roger testifying. Hey, Raj, Bubba, go take a bullet for me in front of Congress, will ya? I mean, if you ever needed proof that Roger Goodell works for the NFL owners and is a puppet for the NFL owners, this is it, is it not? I mean, unless Roger has gone rogue here and is just going to trash Dan Snyder and throw him under the bus in front of Congress, this certainly appears to be Raj taking a bullet for Dan. Raj taking a bullet for one of the people who pay his salary. Next segment, I will discuss Dan Snyder denying Congress. Dan Snyder pulling a Dikembe Mutombo and wagging the finger. Oh, no, no, no. Danny, no show up in front of Congress. I have a lot of Commanders football conversation for you on this installment of the Al Galdi Podcast as well. And the conversation includes encouraging words from Ron Rivera on Wednesday morning about negotiations with Terry McLaurin on a contract extension. Now, yes, these were just words, but Ron sounded rather optimistic that a deal is going to get done and essentially said that negotiations have picked up in recent days. Perhaps Terry no-showing the mandatory minicamp is serving the purpose of Terry no-showing the mandatory minicamp. But I have a nice Terry McLaurin segment for you with everything that Ron said on Wednesday morning. I also have a nice Taylor Heinicke segment for you. He, like Ron, did a post-practice press conference on Wednesday morning, and Heinicke said a lot of good stuff, including how he handled the Commanders' pursuit of a franchise quarterback this offseason, how he is approaching this offseason, how he is working on his arm strength this offseason, and whether there is a path for him to be the Commanders' starting quarterback this coming season. Trust me, you do not want to miss what Taylor Heinicke had to say. Also on the show, the Nationals, victimized and brutalized by the surging Atlanta Braves. An 8-2 loss at Nationals Park on Wednesday night to complete a 3-game sweep in which the Nats got outscored 27-11. The Braves now have won 14 consecutive games. The Nats are in a really tough spot right now. I will sort through the wreckage. And I'll talk Orioles. Adley Rutschman, first career Major League regular season home run, also had a double, but the O's did lose on Wednesday night. They lost a crazy game on Wednesday night, a 7-6, 10-inning loss at the Toronto Blue Jays, despite the Blue Jays killer, Ryan Mountcastle, smashing two home runs. But Bruce Zimmerman got shelled again, and we on Wednesday morning got a statement from Georgia Angelos, wife of Peter Angelos, mother of John and Louis Angelos, as the Orioles family feud continues. Lots to talk about with the O's. If you have never rated this podcast, please consider doing that. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, you can give this podcast a 5-star rating. That is much appreciated. Also, if you have never written a review of the podcast, consider doing that. You can write a review of the podcast if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. The review does not have to be some kind of Shakespearean work, okay? The review can just be a sentence or two saying that you like the podcast, but the ratings and the reviews help to make the podcast successful, so I thank you very much for doing them. Hey, shout out to one of my most favorite former Capitals players, Andre Burakovsky, the man who I used to call the DRE when he played for the Caps. Dre Burakovsky, it was Dre Day on Wednesday night. Game-winning goal in overtime in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final late night on Wednesday night. The Colorado Avalanche defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-3. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Lots of feedback on our conversation on Wednesday's show, episode 336, on what Ron Rivera and various Commanders defensive players said on Tuesday morning about the Jack Del Rio situation. Tweet from Colin Dunphy. Al, you made some good points about Ron Rivera having changed his stories in the past with Dwayne Haskins and Cole Holcomb, but assuming some players have grievances with what Jack Del Rio said, and after seeing a $100,000 fine issued by the team, why do you think a player would still go public? How many can take that risk? Thanks for the tweet, Colin. Well, I would say this. The three Commanders players whose audio I played and reacted to on Wednesday's show are three players who certainly could have taken the risk of expressing being upset with what Jack Del Rio said, to whatever extent there would have been risk in doing that. The three players were Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, and Cameron Curl. I mean, those three guys are starters. Those three guys are three of the team's better defensive players. Each guy could have spoken out against Jack. Each guy did not speak out against Jack. And I thought that that was telling. And oh, by the way, we on Wednesday morning had another prominent Commanders defensive player stand by Jack Del Rio, Montez Sweat. Take a listen to this Q&A between Commanders insider Michael Phillips of Richmond.com and Montez during Montez's post-practice press conference on Wednesday morning.
Jack came in, Jack had talked about his thing, Ron talked about Jack speaking to the team. Where do you stand on that? Are you able to push that aside? Is that something you talked to him about?
I mean, Jack has always showed love and respect to me. That's all I know from him. His political views and all that other stuff that he feels, that's his opinion. We might not have the same outlook on things, but as long as he showed love and respect like he has with all the guys in the workplace, then I'm good.
So there you have it. Montez Sweat. Maybe he doesn't agree with Jack Del Rio politically, but Montez doesn't have a problem with Jack. You know, I'm not naive enough to think that no Commanders players have any problem with what Jack Del Rio said, but what I am not a fan of is this presumption by people, especially in the media, that so many players must be so upset with what Jack said. Not necessarily. It depends on a variety of factors. Not all players think exactly the same. And just because most of the Commanders' defensive players are black doesn't mean that they all now hate Jack Del Rio, because they all must think exactly the same. Life doesn't work that way, as most of you listening know. Tweet from Schmitty. It's revealing that of all of the people who report slash talk about the team, you're literally the only one discussing what Jack Del Rio actually said and the distinction between peaceful protests and the riots, looting, etc. Thank you for that, Schmitty. And then Schmitty, at the end of his tweet, includes a video clip from Cameron Curl's post-practice press conference on Tuesday morning. Yeah, this was funny. Take a listen to this. Q&A with Commanders insider Sam Fortier of the Washington Post.
Why is it important for you guys to handle like Jack's comments in-house?
Because the media like to take stuff and spin it.
Can you say awkward? And what was especially funny about what Cam Curl said was how he said what he said. If you haven't watched the video of Cam's press conference on Tuesday morning, you got to check it out. For most of the presser, particularly during the Jack Del Rio related questions, Cam has this look of annoyance on his face that to me is pretty funny. It's a look of annoyance that suggests that Cam wished that he could just, like, spear the people asking him questions about the Jack Del Rio situation. Look, reporters were doing their jobs, but Cam did not seem thrilled about the Jack Del Rio-related questions. And, of course, that is part of the problem with the Jack Del Rio situation to begin with. It was slash is an unnecessary and avoidable situation that the Commanders so didn't need. Well, if you or someone who you care about has been wronged and you need legal representation, do not hesitate to contact the law firm of Paulson and Nace. If you have a case, you should contact Paulson and Nace. You can call Paulson and Nace at 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson and Nace is widely respected throughout Washington, D.C. and West Virginia for the firm's accomplishments both in and out of courtrooms. Chris Nace and Matt Nace are dedicated trial attorneys who do not balk in the face of large insurance companies or well-known businesses whose practices or products are directly related to the root of your harm. Paulson and Nace does not accept low settlement offers that benefit the people who caused clients harm more than the offers benefit the clients. And Paulson and Nace is not afraid to take a case to trial. Paulson and Nace, in fact, wins trials. Paulson and Nace has secured millions of dollars in verdict and settlement amounts for clients to better enable them to care for themselves and their families. Again, if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. If you feel that you've been wronged or you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Yeah, you're obligated to nothing. Call Paulson and Nace at 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. When you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Schedule your no-obligation appointment by calling 202-902-7611. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. Just make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Well, before we get to actual Commanders football talk off developments on Wednesday, I do want to hit on the major Commanders non-football item from Wednesday, because if the name of the day ends in a Y, then there is a Commanders non-football item. So as I have noted on the podcast, we have been waiting and waiting and waiting on what the response is from Commanders co-owner and co-CEO Dan Snyder and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell would be regarding this congressional hearing on June 22nd. The committee of Congress that has been investigating the Commanders' workplace misconduct and financial scandals has been the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. The committee on June 1st put out a press release announcing that Representative Carolyn Bibiloni, the chairwoman of the Committee on Oversight and Reform, and Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, the chairman of the Subcommittee on Economic and Consumer Policy, had sent letters to Dan Snyder and Roger Goodell requesting that they appear before the committee at a hearing on June 22nd. The letters requested responses from Dan and Roger by June 6th. Well, June 6th was 2 Mondays ago, and we had heard next to nothing until Wednesday morning when we learned that Dan Snyder will not be participating in the hearing being conducted by Congress's House Committee on Oversight and Reform on June 22nd. Now, Congress, as you likely know, has subpoena power. Congress did not subpoena Dan. Congress only requested Dan's appearance at the hearing. It's going to be very interesting to see whether Congress does end up subpoenaing Dan. But in the meantime, Dan has said no to the request that he appear at this hearing on June 22nd. Dan Snyder has denied Congress. One of Dan Snyder's many attorneys, and I mean many attorneys, this guy seems to have like a million attorneys, is Karen Patton Seymour. Karen Patton Seymour sent a letter to Representative Carolyn Bibiloni and Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy. The letter was leaked to the media on Wednesday. Seymour in the letter said that Dan Snyder offered to send to the hearing another, quote, knowledgeable witness, end quote, who, quote, as a result of their day-to-day responsibilities, would be in a far better position to answer questions about the workplace culture, end quote. So Dan wanted to do essentially Operation Human Shield at this hearing. The committee said no. Also, Seymour in the letter expressed having wanted more information from the committee, quote, to provide assurances that would allay the concerns about the hearing, end quote, and asked that the hearing be held on another date because Dan Snyder is scheduled to be out of the country on June 22nd. Oh, gosh darn it, I'm just not going to be around on June 22nd. The committee said no. Additionally, Seymour in the letter wrote, quote, although the committee indicated that the hearing would be focused on the historical workplace culture issues, I was informed that the committee would not provide any assurance that the questions directed to Mr. Snyder would be limited to those issues, end quote. So this should go without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Dan Snyder never had any desire to appear at this hearing. You knew that he and his lawyers, his many lawyers, were going to come up with every excuse and reason not to attend the hearing. And sure enough, they have done that. I mean, this thing about Dan being scheduled to be out of the country on June 22nd. Okay, I mean, who knows if that's actually true, but he could always testify virtually, you know? He could always testify via Zoom or Google Meet. He, of course, has no interest in doing that. So we'll see if Congress pursues this further by issuing a subpoena of Dan Snyder. I still, though, come back to where is all of this going? Like, what exactly is the endgame here for Congress with the commanders? Congressional involvement in the commander scandals is being driven by Democrats in the House of Representatives. Everyone, it feels like, is expecting the Republicans to win back the House come the midterm elections in November. Everyone, it feels like, believes that if/when the Republicans win back control of the House, congressional involvement in the commander scandals comes to an end. Congress cannot just force Dan Snyder out as owner of the commanders. Time potentially is running out on Congress with its involvement with the commanders. So where exactly is congressional involvement in the commander scandals going beyond shaming Dan and the team and, yes, drawing attention to workplace misconduct? I, on Tuesday's show, episode 335, spoke with Howard Gutman. Howard is a big commanders fan. He is a loyal listener of this podcast. He is a lawyer. He is the former United States ambassador to Belgium. Howard knows politics. And understand that Howard is a Democrat. And yet, this was Howard's take on congressional involvement with the commanders and his take on this June 22nd hearing.
Was the Hill making a show of it? Were the Democrats in Congress making a show by giving the letter, and they got all they want from it, which is to announce the letter, and then on June 22nd, they will have other witnesses, they will have two empty chairs, and they will make statements like, if Roger Goodell were here today in that chair, maybe they have a little cut-up doll of Roger Goodell and Dan Snyder. If he were here, I'd ask him this and that, but he did not show. If they were serious about this, Al, the Democrats, they would subpoena them. But if they were serious about their job, remember, the House Oversight Committee is not the House Committee to correct the commanders. It does fact hearings to make broad legislative proposals. So if you're worried about security deposits in sports and do people return them, you would not just subpoena Roger Goodell and Dan Snyder. You'd subpoena the head of every league about their security deposit policy. And if you were worried about sexual harassment in sports today, well, we've got the Oakland, the LA Raiders, Mark Davis owner. His president just quit because he said there's sexual harassment and he can no longer operate. You've got Jerry Jones. We're not sure who's his children and what's happening in their locker room. That, it is prevalent. If you were serious about looking at oversight, if you're serious about looking at oversight in baseball, in oversight in women's basketball, you would have subpoenaed commissioners from five leagues and had a real hearing on that. That's obviously not what they're doing. They're joining the jump on Dan Snyder and the NFL bandwagon because it's good politics right now, and I'm a Democrat, but that's their job to do good politics, but it's also their job to do good legislating. And so I don't think they're serious about actually doing that. Will they go the next step to a subpoena? I tend to doubt it, so this will probably be an empty chair questioning on June 22nd.
All right, so that was Howard Gutman on Tuesday's show, episode 335. And I think that what Howard said made a lot of sense. You know, there's a tendency from people to say, Dan Snyder bad, Congress good. Or, I suppose, Dan Snyder good, Congress bad. It's not that simple. You know, it's true that Dan Snyder presided over a culture of workplace misconduct and may well himself have participated in the workplace misconduct. But it can also be true that the House Democrats are going so hard after Dan purely for show and to try to win over some votes. Your outlook on this doesn't have to be as simple as Dan Snyder heinous, Congress noble. There can be some more nuance to things. I thought that what Howard Gutman said made a lot of sense. And again, Howard is a Democrat. He was our country's ambassador to Belgium during Barack Obama's time as president. The attorneys for multiple former Redskins employees, Lisa Banks and Deborah Katz, issued a statement on Wednesday morning, quote, "We along with our clients are disappointed but not surprised that Dan Snyder does not have the courage to appear voluntarily. We fully expect the committee will issue a subpoena to compel Mr. Snyder to appear. It is time that Mr. Snyder learns that he is not above the law." End quote. So Lisa Banks and Deborah Katz clearly want Congress to use its subpoena power on Dan Snyder. We'll see what comes next. Well, I know what is coming up next on this show. Up next is actual Commanders football conversation and actual happy Commanders football conversation. We on Wednesday morning got very encouraging words from Commanders head coach Ron Rivera on negotiations with receiver Terry McLaurin for a contract extension. Now, nothing is official, nothing is done, but there now is perhaps more reason than ever before to believe that a Commanders Terry McLaurin contract extension will get done this offseason. I'll get to that and more after this.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We, of course, have had so much negativity and so much contentious conversation with the Commanders recently. And, you know, of course, you could say that that isn't even a recent thing. It's a last 20 plus years thing. But I am happy to say to you on this Thursday installment of the Al Galdi podcast that we have a happy Commanders football item to discuss. This item to me was the most significant Commanders football item from Wednesday, which was day two of the team's 3-day mandatory minicamp. And there's irony with this item because it has to do with the lone Commanders player who is no-showing the team's mandatory minicamp, receiver Terry McLaurin. He is entering the fourth and final season of his rookie contract. He has been an absolute bargain for Washington for each of his three NFL seasons. He and the team have been in the midst of negotiations for a contract extension, but the negotiations reportedly had been going nowhere. Well, perhaps the negotiations now are going somewhere. The head coach of our Commanders, Ron Rivera, he on Wednesday morning did a post-practice press conference. He, during the press conference, got asked whether Terry McLaurin is subject to being fined for missing the Commanders' mandatory minicamp. Keep in mind, what Terry is doing in no-showing the mandatory minicamp is considered to be a major no-no in the NFL. The Commanders could fine Terry a maximum of $95,877 for missing all 3 days of this week's mandatory minicamp. This was Ron Rivera on Wednesday morning on whether Terry McLaurin is subject to being fined for missing the Commanders' mandatory minicamp.
You know, he's subject to the rules, and we'll go from there. But we, you know, give you guys a little tidbit. We've been talking with his folks probably the last week, and you know, working on some stuff, and hopefully it'll be taken care of in a matter of time. All right, how much time? Don't know, but it's never contentious. I can promise you that much. So we're feeling pretty good and pretty confident. At some point, this will get done. Okay.
Okay. Very good to hear Ron Rivera say what he said right there. Very good to hear Ron Rivera say what he said right there. Said Ron of a Commanders contract extension with Terry McLaurin, quote, "We've been talking with his folks probably the last week. Hopefully it'll be taken care of in a matter of time. We're feeling pretty good and pretty confident at some point this'll get done," end quote. So at least according to Ron, negotiations with Terry's camp have picked up. Business has picked up. And so if you're like me and already felt that the Commanders would get a contract extension with Terry McLaurin done this offseason, you're now feeling even more optimistic. As I have said, the time to panic about the Commanders not having a contract extension with Terry isn't until the start of Commanders training camp. We're still about a month and a half away from the start of Commanders training camp. And keep in mind that last year, Washington got not one, but two contract extensions done in late July, right before the start of training camp. Washington, last July 27th, announced the signing of interior defensive lineman Jonathan Allen to a 4-year contract extension. Washington, the next day, last July 28th, announced the signing of tight end Logan Thomas to a 3-year contract extension. Maybe this is just how Ron Rivera run football operations operate. Now, Ron himself isn't doing the negotiating. That's almost certainly being handled by general manager Martin Mayhew and or senior vice president of football administration Rob Rogers, but Martin and Rob work for Ron. Ron is the head of the Commanders family. Ron is the Don. He is Don Ron. Martin and Rob are two of Ron's top capos. This was Ron Rivera on Wednesday morning on whether the team taking a while to get a contract extension with Terry McLaurin done is part of a general front office philosophy with contract extensions.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you want to make sure and go through the process of really thinking these things out. You know, there's a lot of planning that goes involved, and it's not just planning for this coming season, but there's strategic planning going forward. I mean, you know, you hope to be able to keep everybody. And I do mean, you know, everybody that you can. And we're trying to map it out. If you start spending, then where's the money going to come from? You know, and just how are you going to, you know, start planning for it? Well, by one at a time and being very, very thoughtful about what we're doing.
Yeah, and what Ron Rivera said right there, to me, is perfectly reasonable and perfectly acceptable. You know, it's easy to say, hey, just pay Terry McLaurin, you know, just pay the man. Yeah, it's not as simple as that. There's a salary cap in the NFL. You as the Commanders want to find the right price point. You don't want to just be a mark and just pay Terry whatever he asks for. Now, ultimately, the Commanders, if they want to sign Terry to a contract extension, are going to have to pay him a lot of money. Probably more money than the Commanders wanted to pay Terry, because Terry is a great receiver, and the receiver market in the NFL has exploded this offseason. And what Terry would be doing in signing a contract extension is foregoing the very lucrative opportunity of unrestricted free agency next offseason and or being franchise tagged by the Commanders next offseason. So the contract extension money needs to be worth it to Terry for him to forego what he could experience in the 2023 offseason. But there most certainly is a number that'll get a Terry McLaurin contract extension done this offseason, and the key is arriving at that number. There is no debating whether Terry McLaurin is worthy of a big-money contract extension. Of course he is. He checks basically every box that there is. He has been very productive, despite having played with a revolving door of quarterbacks. He has been durable. He has been a near-perfect citizen for the team. Zero drama. Ron Rivera on Wednesday morning on whether signing Terry McLaurin to a contract extension is important from a standpoint of showing other quality Commanders players that the team takes care of its star players, especially those who do things the right way.
Right, and I think that's important is that when a player like this does make the impact he's made, and not just on the football team, but, you know, around the community and everything, you have to be able to take care of that guy so everybody understands that, you know, this is the type of player we want. This is how, you know, guys that do it this way. And so that's why, and I've said this, you know, we're not trading Terry. Everything we're doing is we're trying to get this done. And like I said, just to tell you guys, you know, we've been talking with these guys for over probably the last 7-8 days. And we intend to do this because we believe in who Terry is for us and what he can bring to the table.
All right, so more reason for optimism regarding the Commanders getting a contract extension with Terry McLaurin done this offseason. And Ron Rivera, in that cut, very notably said that the Commanders aren't trading Terry. Now, that's not the first time that Ron has said that. Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic, in a piece that came out this past April 4th, revealed that Ron Rivera at the NFL's annual league meeting in Palm Beach, Florida, in late March had said that no teams had reached out to the Commanders about a possible trade for Terry McLaurin, quote, and we wouldn't entertain it, end quote. So note, the Terry McLaurin situation will not be a Davante Adams situation, will not be a Tyreek Hill situation. Terry ain't going nowhere, at least according to Ron. And if the Commanders do sign Terry to a contract extension, then that will send a powerful message that star players want to stay with the team. Now, personally, I think that this narrative that nobody wants to play for the Commanders is overrated. You know, people love to say that nobody wants to play for the Commanders. Nobody wants to come here. The team over just the last 12 months has signed 3 key players to contract extensions: Jonathan Allen, Logan Thomas, and left tackle Charles Leno Jr. And running back J.D. McKissic in March chose to renege on a free agent contract with a Super Bowl contender in the Buffalo Bills in order to re-sign with the Commanders for the same terms to which he had agreed with the Bills. So this narrative that nobody wants to play for the Commanders is overstated in my opinion, but it's not like the Commanders are a premier NFL destination. And we certainly can't forget that the realistically available franchise quarterback who the Commanders seemingly most wanted to trade for this offseason. Russell Wilson chose the Denver Broncos over the Commanders. But this was Ron Rivera on Wednesday morning on how signing Terry McLaurin to a contract extension would convey a strong message to the rest of the NFL.
Absolutely. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get people to understand that, you know, we're not the past. And I've said this to you guys, please don't try to pull us backwards. Help push us forward. And that's what we really want to do. And if we can get guys like Terry to come here and play for us and have success, you know, have success with Carson. Now some guys, people start saying, wait a minute, you can do it here. Absolutely. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create that type of atmosphere.
Yeah, and creating that type of atmosphere certainly isn't easy. And there has been so much working against that type of atmosphere being created for our team. But that doesn't mean that that type of atmosphere cannot be created. So among the Commanders players who did a post-practice press conference on Wednesday morning after the day's mandatory minicamp practice was quarterback Taylor Heinicke. Yes, Tay-Tay spoke on Wednesday. It was good to hear from our guy, Tay-Tay. We this offseason have not heard much from Tay-Tay, nor have we discussed much about Tay-Tay. Taylor Heinicke, of course, ended up being Washington's primary starting quarterback last season. He, in the 2021 regular season, played in 16 of Washington's 17 games and started 15 of Washington's 17 games. The results, of course, were mixed. Now, when he was good, he was actually really good, if not great. The 30-29 walk-off win over the New York Giants at FedEx Field on Thursday Night Football in Week 2, Heinicke was outstanding in that game. The 34-30 win at the Atlanta Falcons in Week 4, Heinicke was very good in that game. The four-game winning streak, Weeks 10 through 13, Heinicke was arguably Washington's MVP for that stretch. Heinicke, over the four games, completed 92 of his 119 pass attempts. That works out to a completion percentage of 77.3. But, of course, also for Taylor Heinicke last season was him being really bad at times. For Heinicke last season, his good could be great, but his bad could be awful. He was really bad in the 33-22 loss to the New Orleans Saints at FedEx Field in Week 5. He was horrendous in the two losses to the Dallas Cowboys. Here's all that you need to know about how up and down Taylor Heinicke was last season. ESPN's total QBR is on a scale of 0 to 100. Heinicke in the 2021 regular season had two games in which he, for each game, had a total QBR of at least 86, which is excellent, and had three games in which he, for each game, had a total QBR of 5 or worse, which is atrocious. And so the Commanders, this offseason, of course, engineered an all-out search for a franchise quarterback. Commanders head coach Ron Rivera told anyone who would listen that the team was all in on trying to get a franchise quarterback. I wondered in January and February and March, as we discussed and dissected what the team might do at quarterback, what must Taylor Heinicke be thinking, right? I mean, it couldn't have felt great to know that his performance last season was such that the team in the ensuing offseason was going all out to find an upgrade at his position. But Taylor Heinicke is a total pro, and we saw and heard this at his post-practice press conference on Wednesday morning. Here was Heinicke on Wednesday morning on how he approached the Commanders' oh-so-obvious and apparent search for a franchise quarterback this offseason.
So I kind of knew we were going to go out and get someone, whether it was through the draft or free agency. So, you know, when you know that, you kind of just sit back and wait. You don't stress over it. You know it's going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. So what I did was just kept on training, trying to be the best me I can be. And again, you know, like I just said earlier, I just try and control what I can control. Because when you start thinking about that, when you start reading all those things, that's when you start getting your own head, stuff like that. So I try and pull that away and do my own thing and get better from there.
Yeah, great attitude right there from Taylor Heinicke. That is the perfect attitude for him to have. Now, as you may recall, it was around this time last year that Ron Rivera started talking up a quarterback competition between Heinicke and the quarterback who Washington had signed the previous March, presumably to be the team's starting quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Remember the quarterback competition talk from Ron? At this time last year, Ron made it a point to tell people that there would be a quarterback competition between Fitzpatrick and Heinicke at Washington training camp. There ended up not being all that much of a competition. I mean, I think if Fitzpatrick had just been hideous at training camp and in the preseason, and Heinicke had been on fire at training camp and in the preseason, then maybe things would have been different, but we ended up having no such scenario. And this offseason, we have had zero talk of a quarterback competition for the Commanders. They, in March, traded for Carson Wentz. He is their unquestioned starting quarterback, their unquestioned QB1, at least for now. But the final question of Heinicke's post-practice press conference on Wednesday morning was a good one. The question came from a friend of the Al Galdi podcast, Tom Lavero, columnist for the Washington Times. Take a listen to this exchange.
Do you feel you'll have any opportunity at all to change people's minds in the building about the starting quarterback position, or is that not even an option for you?
I don't think that's an option. You look at the NFL, it's at the end of the day, it's kind of a business. And if you're paying someone $30 million and you're paying someone else $2 million, you're paying this guy $30 million to play, you know? And that's not me, you know. Carson's a great quarterback, and you see it through OTAs and minicamp. And I hope he goes out there and succeeds. And again, my job is just to back him up. Hopefully he's on his deal, help him out whatever way I can. And if for some reason he goes down, I'm ready to go play. So, and that's how I look at it. But again, in the NFL is a business. You're paying a guy a lot of money. You're paying him money for a reason. He's going to play.
Yeah, good question from Tom Lavero. Good answer from Taylor Heinicke. And of course, Heinicke was right about what he said. Now, it was interesting to hear him be as blunt as he was, but Heinicke was right. Carson Wentz for the 2022 season has a salary cap hit of $28.3 million. Taylor Heinicke for the 2022 season has a salary cap hit of $3.6 million. There's a difference there, a big difference. And let's be honest, the money isn't the only difference between the two guys. Carson Wentz last season was a better quarterback than Taylor Heinicke was. Wentz, for the 2021 regular season, had a Pro Football Focus wins above replacement of 1.56. Heinicke, for the 2021 regular season, had a PFF WAR of 0.7. Wentz's value last season per PFF WAR was more than double the value of Heinicke. Wentz, last season, per a variety of metrics, was an elite deep passer. PFF grades are on a scale of 0 to 100. Wentz, for the 2021 regular season, had a PFF passing grade on deep passes of 90.7. Ain't nobody saying that Heinicke last season was an elite deep passer. And I say that as someone who is a Taylor Heinicke fan and is a bigger fan of him than most people are. Now, of course, one of the reasons that Heinicke was not a great deep passer last season is his arm strength. He doesn't have great arm strength. I found this notable from Heinicke's post-practice press conference on Wednesday morning. He, this offseason, has been working on his arm strength. Now, you may be saying to yourself, well, how do you do that? Isn't arm strength just something that you either have or you don't? Well, this was Taylor Heinicke on Wednesday morning on how a quarterback can improve his arm strength.
I think it's all mechanics. There's a number of things that, kind of looking at film, my hips weren't coming through. A lot of my weight was on my front foot, so I couldn't really drive the ball. A lot of times my front shoulder was down, so I couldn't get a nice little loft on it. So again, those are all things that I've been working on, and I feel like I've been improving on it the last 2 months.
Yeah, what Taylor Heinicke said right there is something that I have brought up, and I'm sure that many of you have noticed. Heinicke too often doesn't step into his throws, and I believe, and he pretty clearly believes, that that has been a big part of his lack of arm strength. If he just steps into more throws, I think the arm strength problem will become a lot less of a problem. Like, it'll never be said that Heinicke has a cannon for an arm, but I do think that there's at least something to the idea of improving your mechanics in order to deliver stronger throws. Pitchers in baseball work on their mechanics in order to increase velocity. The same can be true for quarterbacks. So the plan, of course, is for Carson Wentz to be the Commanders' starting quarterback this coming season. But as we know so well as Commanders fans, quarterback plans can change. The guy who was supposed to be Washington's QB1 for the 2021 season, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he ended up not even playing in one half of one game in the 2021 regular season. He suffered a right hip subluxation in the first half of the 2016 loss to the Los Angeles Chargers at FedEx Field in week one, and ultimately was done for the season, and now Fitzpatrick has decided to retire. So what if something like this happens with Carson Wentz this coming season? Taylor Heinicke on Wednesday morning on how he is approaching this offseason as compared to last offseason.
It's kind of the same because last offseason I came in here as the backup to Fitz, and kind of same thing this year. I think the only difference is I have experience now, having started 15, 16 games. So I kind of feel like I know what it takes to be a good quarterback. I know what it takes to win. So I think that's the biggest difference from, you know, last year to this year. But again, you know, this situation is no different than any other year I've been in. It's kind of just clawing my way in, trying to earn that spot in the team and go from there. So the biggest thing I do is, again, you've heard me say this, control what I can control and go out there, do my best and see what happens.
Yeah, Taylor Heinicke very much seems to have the right attitude about his situation. He certainly now is a much more experienced NFL quarterback. Here was Heinicke on Wednesday morning on what he learned from being Washington's primary starting quarterback last season, during which he started 15 of the team's 17 regular season games and played in 16 of the team's 17 regular season games. And the one game that he missed was due to being on the reserve COVID-19 list.
The durability was the biggest question mark. I started one game back in 2018 and tore my tricep in the first half. There's been a number of concussions throughout the years, so that was the biggest question mark I wanted to check. And you know, I did that. So kind of looking back at last year through this offseason, you know, there's a lot of things. It's sometimes I overcomplicated things, was looking too far into the defense instead of just it's black and white. You know, if they do this, throw it here. I was just thinking too much. So again, one of the biggest things this throughout this OTAs minicamp is just sticking to the playbook. You know, what we talk about meetings, just go out there and execute it. Don't think too much about it. So I feel like I've made some strides in that.
Yeah, and the durability thing that Taylor Heinicke talked about early in that cut is a big thing. Remember, that really was the number one concern with Heinicke at this time a year ago. Can this guy even stay healthy? Well, he stayed healthy throughout last season, and he took some shots, but he kept getting back up, and he kept starting games. I don't think that Heinicke gets enough credit for answering the question of can he stay healthy for a full NFL season with an emphatic yes last season. But, of course, playing quarterback in the NFL isn't just about staying healthy. Playing quarterback in the NFL also is about playing well. And the hope is that Carson Wentz will play quarterback well for the Commanders this coming season. But I tell you, I still get the feeling that we haven't seen the last of Taylor Heinicke as a starting quarterback for the team. Washington has started at least three different quarterbacks in each of the last four regular seasons, 2018 through 2021. I would not bet against Taylor Heinicke starting at some point for the Commanders in the 2022 regular season for some reason. So the Nationals' worst series this season was a three-game sweep at the New York Mets, May 30th through June 1st. The Nats, over those three games, got outscored 28-5. I don't think that what just happened to the Nats in their three-game sweep against the Atlanta Braves at Nationals Park was worse than what happened to the Nats in that three-game sweep at the Mets. But what just happened to the Nats in their three-game sweep against the Braves at Nationals Park was not far off from what happened to the Nats in that three-game sweep at the Mets. The Nats lost to the Braves 8-2 at Nationals Park on Wednesday night to complete a three-game sweep. The Nats this season now are a National League worst 23-42. The Nats now have the worst run differential in the majors at minus 102. Yes, the Nats through 65 games this season have been outscored by 102 runs. The Braves now have won 14 consecutive games, and the Nats in this series were outscored by the Braves 27-11. This was a brutal series for the Nats in what is a brutal stretch for the Nats. No Juan Soto for the Nats on Wednesday night. No Soto for a second consecutive game. He remains out with this right knee contusion that he suffered on Monday night when he slipped in the dugout and banged his knee against a bench. Here was Nats manager Davey Martinez during his postgame press conference on Wednesday night on where we're at with Juan Soto.
Yeah, he just didn't. He said stopping and going bothered him some. So at this point, I'm just going to be smart. He said he really feels like one more day could really help him. So he was available pinch hit today if we need him. But tomorrow, hopefully he comes in. He's a lot better, and he'll be in the lineup.
Yeah, so the Braves over the three games blasted 13 home runs, five homers in each of the first two games, three more homers on Wednesday night. So here you had the Nats facing a team in the Braves that is flying right now, 14 consecutive wins, hitting homers left and right, and the Nats were without Juan Soto over the final two games. I mean, the Nats with Juan Soto aren't a good team. The Nats sans Soto and against a team as mighty as the Braves. I mean, good luck, right? Way too little production from the Nats' other two big sluggers, Nelson Cruz and Josh Bell in this series. Nelson Cruz on Wednesday night was the Nats starting DH and number three batter for a second straight game. He went 0 for 4 with two strikeouts. This off him on Tuesday night, having gone 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Josh Bell on Wednesday night was the Nats starting first baseman and number four batter for a second straight game. He went 0 for 3 with a walk and two strikeouts. This off him on Tuesday night, having gone 0 for 4 with two strikeouts. So Nelson Cruz and Josh Bell went hitless over the final two games of this series, as the Nats were without Juan Soto over the final two games of this series. The offensive bright spots for the Nats on Wednesday night were two young players, two potential building blocks, Luis Garcia and K-Bert Ruiz. Garcia on Wednesday night as an Nats starting shortstop and number eight batter, 1 for 3 with a solo homer. Garcia in an Nats one-run fifth, a two-out solo homer to right center field to cut the Nats deficit to 3-1 and to end the no-hit bid of Braves starter Spencer Strider, who gave the Nats all kinds of problems on Wednesday night. This was an impressive homer by Garcia. The homer went a projected 420 feet per Statcast, and then Garcia in the bottom of the ninth drew a two-out hit-by-pitch. So the Nats on June 1st recalled Luis Garcia from AAA Rochester. He now has played 14 games in his latest go-round at the major league level, 57 plate appearances, batting average of .352, on-base percentage of .368, slugging percentage of .519. He has been outstanding offensively. The defense, yes, is a work in progress, but offensively, Luis Garcia has been really good over these last 2 weeks here for the Nats. And then K-Bert Ruiz on Wednesday night, he is a Nats starting catcher and number five batter, 1 for 4 with an RBI single. Ruiz in a Nats one-run sixth, a two-out RBI single up the middle to cut the Nats deficit to 3-2. But also on Wednesday night for the Nats offensively was a major base-running blunder by another young Nat, but this young Nat is a veteran Nat at this point, Victor Robles. And look, the Nats lost this game 8-2, so you can't go too nuts over any singular occurrence in this game. But with Victor Robles, it's not just about this singular occurrence. Victor Robles is known for committing blunders on the base paths, and he committed another one on Wednesday night. So Robles was an Nats starting center fielder and number nine batter. He went 1 for 4 with a single. The single came in the bottom of the seventh. The single was a two-out opposite field single to shallow right center field on an 0-2 pitch. But Robles then got tagged out for the third out on a terrible base running blunder as he rounded past second base and then got tagged out in going back to second base on a two-out grounder by Lane Thomas that resulted in a fielding error by second baseman Orlando Arcia. I mean, just a boneheaded play. Victor Robles knows better than that. And the Nats were furious about this, furious at Robles for doing this. This was not like a one-run game in which you absolutely needed one more run. This was a game in which the Nats were down by quite a bit at that point in the bottom of the seventh inning. You needed runs. You needed base runners. And Victor Robles ended up being tagged out, and for the third out, no less, on a play on which he had no business being tagged out. It's a rough go of it here for Victor Robles because he this season is doing as he did over the previous two seasons. He's not hitting all that well You know, he is good defensively in center field, but he's committing boo-boos on the base paths. And, you know, at this point, he's not even an everyday player for the Nats right now. He's playing like two out of every three games, something like that. But it's not a given game in, game out that Victor Robles is in the Nats starting lineup anymore. And then there was the Nats pitching on Wednesday night. So the Nats pitching is reeling right now due to a variety of circumstances. Principal among them, the Nats pitching just isn't very good. And the Nats right now are in the midst of a really rough stretch. The Nats are in the midst of a stretch of 14 games in 13 days. And so the Nats on Wednesday night needed length, needed innings from starting pitcher Eric Fetty. Well, the Nats did not get length from Eric Fetty. Fetty on Wednesday night, 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. That's it. He only lasted for 5 1/3 innings, and he had his typical final line of 3 runs, 5 1/3 innings. It feels like every final line for Eric Fetty is something along the lines of 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. Fetty continued to do that thing he does, which is put so many guys on base. Fetty on Wednesday night gave up 7 hits, a double, and 6 singles. Fetty on Wednesday night issued 3 walks and a wild pitch. He did record 4 strikeouts, so that did help to drive up his pitch count. But take a listen to what Eric Fetty's pitch count ended up being. Fetty, over his 5 1/3 innings, threw 111 pitches. That is a staggering pitch count for 5 1/3 innings. 111 pitches, 64 strikes versus 47 balls. Davey Martinez had Fetty out there for as long as was reasonably possible. I mean, again, the Nats just needed length from Fetty on Wednesday night, and he just did not give that to the Nats. Fetty just is not pitch efficient. I mean, it's a real problem for him. And you look at Fetty's season now, 13 starts, ERA of 4.88, a whip of 1.56, and a walks per 9 innings of 4.45. Again, he puts a lot of guys on base, and the walks have really emerged as a problem for him this year. Even by Eric Fetty standards, a walk rate of 4.45 is really high, and yet that is the walk rate for Eric Fetty this season. And the other thing, too, is so Fetty for a while was doing well this season. 9 starts into his season, he had an ERA of 3.55. Well, 4 starts later now, his ERA for the season is up to 4.88. And this is what happened to Eric Fetty last season. Eric Fetty last season was quite good over his first 10 starts, and then his season unraveled. Well, Eric Fetty this season, quite good over 9 starts, and at least as things stand right now, his season is unraveling. The Nats bullpen on Wednesday night was not good either. 3 Nats relievers combined to allow 5 runs in 3 2/3 innings. Steve Cishek allowed 2 runs in 1 1/3 innings. He, in the top of the 7th, with the Nats having just pulled it within 3-2, issued a leadoff 5-pitch walk of Dansby Swanson, then gave up a first-pitch 2-run homer to Austin Riley to center field for a 5-2 Braves lead. The homer went a projected 441 feet per Statcast. That was some shot that Riley hit off Cishek. Carl Edwards Jr. then came into the game. He got 3 outs, but he also allowed 3 runs. He, in the top of the 8th, gave up a leadoff homer to Orlando Arcia and a 2-out first-pitch 2-run homer to Austin Riley for an 8-2 Braves lead. The Braves, like I said, in this 3-game series, 13 home runs. That is a whopping total of home runs for a team in a 3-game series. 13 homers. Francisco Perez did toss 1 1/3 scoreless innings, although he put some guys on base. Really rough series for the Nats in a really rough stretch for the Nats. Next up for the Nats, a 5-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies at Nationals Park. 5 games in 4 days. Included in the mix is a day-night doubleheader on Friday and a 4:35 game on Saturday afternoon. Before that game, the Nats will retire Ryan Zimmerman's number 11. So this is a big weekend coming up here for the Nats. But again, lots of games right now, games against some good teams and imposing lineups right now, and the Nats pitching is just not in a good place in a season in which the Nats as a whole are not in a good place. Game 1 against the Phillies at Nationals Park, Thursday night at 7:05. Patrick Corbin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Well, everybody's favorite game show, the Angelos Family Feud, got even wackier for the Orioles on Wednesday. As we have discussed, Louis Angelos last Thursday filed a lawsuit against his brother, John Angelos, and their mother, Georgia Angelos, for control of the Orioles. This as the father, Peter Angelos, remains in failing health. John Angelos is the Orioles chairman and CEO. He this past Monday morning issued a statement adamantly saying that the O's aren't relocating. Now, Georgia Angelos, the mother, she on Wednesday morning issued a statement. It is hard right now to keep track of all of these statements from the Angelos family. Said Georgia Angelos in her statement that came out on Wednesday morning, in part, quote, "In light of the false and painful claims that have been alleged in the lawsuit that my son Louis has brought against me and my older son John, I want to set the record straight. My husband of 56 years, Peter, has appointed me his sole attorney, in fact, and the sole controlling trustee of his revocable trust. I alone have the authority to manage the family's assets and make decisions, and I take this responsibility very seriously. I have always believed that family disputes and concerns should remain among family members, and I deeply regret any distraction that this may have caused to our dedicated Orioles senior leadership team and staff, our many community partners, and most importantly, devoted Orioles fans. I look forward to putting this matter behind us all." Go Orioles! I love it. I love it. End quote. End quote. Yeah, whatever. Just sell the team already, please. Okay? Just sell the team already, please. What an embarrassment for the Orioles this Angelos family feud is. But I got a kick out of that. Hey, but go Orioles. Anyway, wild game for the O's on Wednesday night. A 7-6, 10-inning loss at the Toronto Blue Jays in Game 3 of a four-game series. The O's this season now are 27-37. Look, tremendous comeback by the O's on Wednesday night. They overcame a 5-0 fourth-inning deficit. They ended up losing on a walk-off single by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. off Felix Bautista to begin the bottom of the 10th. Otherwise, the Orioles bullpen was great in this game. Brian Baker, Dylan Tate, and Jorge Lopez combined for 4 2/3 scoreless innings. Another good game for Ryan Mountcastle. Boy, does Mountcastle just kill the Blue Jays. Mountcastle on Wednesday night as the Orioles starting first baseman and number 3 batter, 2 for 4 with 2 home runs, and they were 2 moonshots. Mountcastle in the Orioles, 1-run 7th, a leadoff homer on a bomb to left field. The homer went a projected 424 feet per Statcast. Then Mountcastle in the Orioles, 3-run 8th, a 2-out 2-run homer to left center field to tie the game at 6 and complete the Orioles' comeback from that 5-0 fourth-inning deficit. This home run by Mountcastle went a projected 413 feet per Statcast. Here was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his post-game session with reporters on Wednesday night on Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah, hit that first ball so hard. And, you know, I think 2 breaking balls he got on. So, Mounty's seeing the ball extremely well right now and taking great at-bats, and I got 2 huge homers for us.
Yeah, remember, Ryan Mountcastle was big for the O's on Tuesday night, that 6-5 win at the Blue Jays. Mountcastle in that game as the Orioles starting first baseman and number 3 batter, 3 for 5 with a 2-run homer and 2 doubles. Like I said, he is a monster against the Blue Jays. Mountcastle this season now leads the O's in home runs with 12 and is number 1 among all qualified Orioles in slugging percentage at .490. Also having a big night on Wednesday night for the O's, Adley Rutschman. And boy, is it nice to say that. Rutschman has not done well during his time at the major league level, at least in terms of results. He has hit some balls hard, but the results just have not been there. Well, the results were there on Wednesday night. Rutschman has the Orioles starting catcher and number 4 batter, 2 for 4 with a 2-run homer and a double. Yes, Adley Rutschman finally has homered at the major league level. Rutschman in the Orioles' 2-run 4th, a 2-out first pitch, 2-run homer to center field for his first career major league regular season home run. And the home run was legit. The homer went a projected 411 feet per Statcast. Also, the 2 runs batted in, his first 2 major league regular season runs batted in. So this game was Adley Rutschman's 21st major league regular season game. It took him that long to hit his first home run and get his first RBI, but he got those 2 things. Like I said, things have not gone well for Adley Rutschman so far. It's not time to panic or anything like that. It's just, you know, worth noting, he's not off to some white hot start. I mean, Adley Rutschman came into the game on Wednesday night over 82 plate appearances at the major league level in the 2022 regular season with an OPS plus of just 49. OPS plus is OPS that's adjusted for your home ballpark and league. 100 is average. Anything below 100 is bad. Rutschman's OPS plus for this season coming into the game on Wednesday night, 49. That is brutal, man. He's better than this, and we'll see him be better than this, but it's worth noting, like, he has struggled, but he hit the home run on Wednesday night. He also had a double on Wednesday night. Rutschman in the top of the 7th had a double on a 1-2 pitch. But the O's did lose this game, and they lost this game in no small part because Bruce Zimmerman was bad again. Bruce Zimmerman on Wednesday night struggled for a 6th consecutive start. He allowed 6 runs in 4 2/3 innings. He gave up an astounding 11 hits, 3 home runs, a double, and 7 singles. He issued no walks. He couldn't issue any walks. Everybody was too busy getting hits off him. He finished with 2 strikeouts. And Zimmerman, over his 4 2/3 innings, threw 80 pitches. It is not good seeing what has happened here with Bruce Zimmerman. He, over his first 7 starts this season, had an ERA of 2.72, but he, over his last 6 starts, has been putrid. Check this out. Bruce Zimmerman, over his last 6 starts, has allowed 33 earned runs in 30 1/3 innings. He has more earned runs than innings pitched, and he, over those 30 1/3 innings, has given up 52 hits. That is a sky-high total of hits to give up over 30 1/3 innings. 52 hits. It is batting practice right now when Bruce Zimmerman pitches. I hate seeing this because, like I said, he was so good to begin this season. First 7 starts, ERA at 2.72. Last 6 starts, he has been a far cry from the guy who had that 2.72 ERA. Game 4 at the Blue Jays is on Thursday afternoon at 3:07. Tyler Wells will be the Orioles starting pitcher. He will oppose former Oriole Kevin Gausman, who, in case you haven't been paying attention, has been quite good this season. 12 starts, ERA at 2.67. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Friday show, episode 338, will feature plenty on the Commanders off Thursday's day 3 of their 3-day mandatory minicamp. We'll talk Nationals and Orioles as well. The Nats on Thursday night at 7:05 will play game 1 of a 5-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies at Nationals Park. The O's on Thursday afternoon, beginning at 3:07, will conclude a 4-game series at the Toronto Blue Jays. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and I'll talk to you on Friday.
Why is it important for you guys to handle, like, Jack's comments in-house?
Because the media like to take stuff and spin it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.